It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 130 of Sports Day Plus, we are getting into UT baseball, UT softball, Larry Allen, my Chicago vacation, and more with my best friend Kevin Dunn, who is joining me for the full hour. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. And at KevinDunn01 is where you can find my next guest on Twitter as well. It is the great Kevin Dunn. What's up, KD? How you doing on this Tuesday?
I'm doing well, man. Getting humid. Starting to get hot here, man. So, with my attire every day, it's not the most apt attire to dress in this weather. So it's I don't know, my bike rides are getting earlier and earlier, I'll say that.
So my friends and I played sand volleyball this morning, and it was about as sluggish as you can imagine, and it's just the humidity. You don't want to do anything too fast, and so there were still good games, there was competition, but it also felt like it was going at a snail's pace. It was like watching Roy Oswalt on a mound or something. I feel you there. And by the way, being in Chicago for a week and stepping off the plane at Bergstrom on Sunday afternoon, I mean, the humidity just hits you in the face. It's my wife, my kids, and I all made the exact same sound as we were exiting the airplane. And it was a negative sound that spoke to a general discomfort with just how muggy things are. It does feel like Houston here in Austin. That's not always the case, even this time of year.
No, it's not. We talked about it last week. I mean, my dad's from Chicago, so I would spend about a month up there every summer. And we'd get off, I think it was United, not that it matters. but I would get off the plane, and you get the runway, the terminal. And, as soon as you get off, I could just feel, coming from Austin to Chicago, I'm like, oh my God, this feels so good. And then you have the opposite when you return, and it's just that, it just hits you. I mean, it just kind of like drapes you, and it's like, oh my God, like this is too much. But yeah, the humidity is that's what bothers me the most. And so you play volleyball, I ride my bike, I swim, but riding my bike, I can't get the workout I want to get because I'm just drenched. And I'm like, well, I didn't even get a good ride in and get the exercise I wanted to, but I've lost 5 pounds and I'm soaked.
Yeah, not to get too nerdy on this, but the air is thicker, so you're not able to breathe as deeply, so your oxygen levels are down a little bit too. Like, it does have a cumulative effect on things, and this is just our reality until probably September or October, sadly. Now, we did catch a break last August. It did cool down at least a little bit, but I'm not expecting that. That was an aberration. Typically, the hottest times of year here are July and August. So if we're already in the 90s with the heat index feeling like 105 to 110 most days, I mean, God, it's going to be like Death Valley by the time we get to July.
Yeah, I'm getting in my pool later. Well, how was Chicago, man? I mean, good trip overall?
It was a great trip overall. You and I spoke last week, a couple days in. You asked me at the time if Chicago still felt like it was going in a really bad direction. And my initial thoughts were no, but give me a couple more days to explore the city to do so. And I explored for a couple of more days, and I can at least say that during the daytime, Chicago doesn't feel like the hellhole that it was becoming a couple of years ago. So that's good news, because we want our big cities, our big beautiful cities like what Chicago is, to not devolve into total chaos.
That's great news. I mean, I'm so glad to hear it. I mean, I've talked to all my buddies in the big cities, and we all want San Francisco, Chicago, New York, Seattle, Austin, Portland, Minneapolis, Miami. Miami's probably more well-run, but we want them to be great cities. Like, we're all Americans. We're proud of those places. I mean, those are places that people come from Japan to go to. They're great cities. They're incredible cities. So let's keep them going, right?
Yeah, on the flip side of that coin, too, by the way, because we went to Portland last summer as part of a trip up and down the I-5 in Oregon, Portland did not feel like a city that was recovering all that well. My progressive friends in Portland had a hard time talking about anything but how bad the homeless situation had gotten in Portland. So Chicago seems to be in a better place, at least a year removed from where Portland was, based on our limited experience there.
That's the whole thing. So you and I have friends on both aisles. You and I are pretty independent. But, you know, I listen to my liberal, super liberal friends in New York more than I do my conservative friends there. I don't have many there, but some because if they tell you, hey, look, I voted for this legislation, but this is not working out well, that kind of tells you, all right, things are bad. Because they don't want to admit that, but when they do, they're just being honest and being a objective human being.
Exactly. So as far as Chicago itself is concerned, we spent the weekends in the burbs and spent time in the city. My wife and I with our two kids. The two kids have technically been to Chicago before, but it was 6 years ago. So they were 1 and 3 at the time. So they actually have a little bit more consciousness working for them this time around. So we did a very touristy version of Chicago. Went to the Lincoln Park Zoo. We went to the Museum of Science and Industry. We went to the Shedd Aquarium. We walked the Mag Mile. We went to the top of the Hancock. We did the architecture.
By the way, I did all those. How are the museums any of those? Like everything you mentioned, I went to. Like, are they still fun and informative and a good experience?
Fun and informative, yes. Good experience for the most part. I will say that the Museum of Science and Industry, I had the same feeling about that place that I did when we went to NASA about a year ago when Justine graduated from UT Galveston with her doctorate in nursing. We went to NASA one of the days that we were staying in an Airbnb on Galveston Island, and NASA was underwhelming in part because a lot of it was dilapidating. Like, it felt like it was falling into disrepair and they weren't making the necessary renovations to keep it functional and to keep the interactive element cool for kids who do want to press the buttons and turn knobs and things like that. Same thing with the Museum of Science and Industry. It's like they spent any money that's been brought in the last decade, let's say, on the gift shop, which does look really cool and obviously is a money earner for them. And then also this very basic VR ride where you get in what looks like a lunar module, let's say, and it does rock around and you're looking at a screen ahead. So it does have a little bit of a VR feel to it, but ultimately it's like a 5 to 10 minute experience in this museum. And by the way, there's an unwritten rule for museums that applied to every museum that we went to when we were in Chicago, and that is no sane person wants to be in a museum for longer than an hour to an hour and 15 minute max. You might be able to get to an hour and a half if you're having to sit there and wait for something like we were at the Shedd Aquarium. We were waiting for the dolphin show for 15 minutes, so we stayed at the Shedd for an hour and a half. But ultimately, you don't need more than an hour in pretty much any museum on the planet. I'm sorry. I know that there may be exceptions in Florence or Paris or someplace else like that, but pretty much every museum I've been to
in my life. I've been to the Louvre, told the girlfriend, we have an hour here. You know, we can stare at paintings for 4, but we have an hour here. We're gone.
So the Shedd Aquarium.
Let's go get cheese, wine, good ham somewhere. All right.
Exactly. Find a couple of paintings that you really want to go see. Go stare at those for a few minutes and then go on your way and actually enjoy the city. You can say that you enjoyed the museum as well. You'll be interested to hear this about the Shedd Aquarium because the Shedd has decided to be politically proactive. And on the one hand, you understand it's a Shedd Aquarium, so there is a conservation that comes into play. But the Shedd Aquarium was actively encouraging kids to be vocal with their political leaders to tell them that they need to put a stop to global warming. That's what was happening at the Shedd Aquarium last week. And yeah. I was sitting there.
And by the way, there's nothing more than 9-year-olds telling me how to run the country that I love more. It's like the who's the Greta whatever?
Greta Thunberg.
Yeah, I think she means well. When she was 17, or 14, I don't need her telling me about how to save the world. No. Like, you're 14. Shut up.
Exactly. That's what I was saying, too. Like, regardless of what your political leanings are, you're a smelly aquarium. Shut up. Have these criminal dolphins do their thing for 10 minutes and let us go about our day. But the Shedd Aquarium felt the need to preach to folks prior to the Dolphins show. All right, that is it for segment one here with Kevin Dunn on Sports Day Plus. Coming up, we may continue the Chicago conversation. We will definitely get into UT baseball and what the future holds for David Pearson Company and more here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Kevin Dunn here on Sports Day Plus. Just spent segment one talking about my Chicago vacation. A couple of small notes that I'll get to before the end of today's show with regards to that vacation, but I did want to get into some sports with KD in this segment, particularly the UT baseball team seeing its season come to an end on Sunday after a tough loss to A&M in extra innings on Saturday night. They play a tight one with the Louisiana Raging Cajuns through about six innings before the wheels come off and the season effectively comes to an end. And with the end of the season, we do have a lot of questions being asked now about the future of this baseball program under David Pierce. Kevin, you have not shied away from your feelings about David Pierce and whether you think he is the right guy for the job for this program. And here we are with a 1-2 showing at the College Station Regional. And I know, because you and I have talked prior to broadcasting right now, how you feel about David Pierce. But do you think this is the end for David Pierce here at Texas?
Yeah, I do. And first off, personally, I like David Pierce. So this is a almost impossible job. If you look at everything, they're Kentucky basketball. They are Alabama and Notre Dame football. Like, it's the top program of all time. So there are insane expectations. I like David. I don't think he ever should have been hired. I think there were circumstances that kind of set that up. If you remember, eight or nine coaches passing up the top job in the country because there was a caps on the contract. I think he's gone.
Wait, there was a cap on how much Mike Perrin could pay the next Texas baseball coach?
Mike Perrin was the interim AD. It's not a Mike Perrin issue. He only had so many things he could do.
Huh.
But yes, there was. And a really low cap.
Yeah, and I think that it's important that you gave the qualifier that you did. This doesn't say anything about David Pierce the person. It has to do with David Pierce and what he is as a baseball coach versus what this illustrious program needs out of its baseball coach to achieve the level of successes that Texas baseball fans have become accustomed to over decades.
Yeah, no. We own BlackRock or Goldman Sachs. We're looking for CEO. We are looking for the top of the top. This isn't, you know, some middling company in the middle of Missouri. So it puts a huge stress on him. He's always been really good to me. But the reality is that, you know, they had four coaches for 100 years. Billy Dish, Bib Falk, Gus, and Augie. And they were all Hall of Famers. And they all, Billy Dish, if there would have been national championships back then, would have won like 11. Bib won two, Gus won two, Augie won two. And they were in Omaha the whole time. They literally had like condos there. So it's more about the program and less about David Pierce. It's no knock on David Pierce, but he should have never been the coach, probably, and did pretty well. I think that's more a product of the UT system or UT baseball program than it is Pierce necessarily. Get the right guy. We're going to the SEC. You better be ready to go.
It's not a one-to-one comparison, but it was somewhat similar to how Charlie Strong ended up the coach at Texas. In Charlie's case, maybe it was a bad year to have to deal with a college football coaching search. And with David Pierce, as you said, there were a lot of guys who were either leveraging the Texas job to get raises at their place or flat out had to say no because even though Texas is a better gig than what they were coaching at the time, they weren't going to take a huge downgrade in pay in order to come to Austin to do so, considering the pressure cooker that you are entering when you come to the to Austin as the UT baseball coach.
Yeah. I mean, and so, I mean, David did well at Sam Houston and Tulane, but UT kind of put themselves in this position with the spot they're in. And now it's like, dude, you're UT baseball. Like, you devalued your capital as a program during the last hire. Go ahead and capitalize on your on the credit you have as a program right now.
There's been a lot of conversation about subpar NIL for UT baseball. Do you think that changes with a coach that more people are on the same page with, assuming that David Pierce is gone and they decide to hire somebody else? And we'll certainly get to those candidates here in a second.
I don't think I know. Yes.
You know. So as far as some potential replacements, if David Pierce is no longer the coach of Longhorn baseball, you've talked about this in the past, but for people who weren't able to tune in then, who do you think some of the prime candidates are to replace David Pierce as the Longhorns baseball coach?
If I was CBC, as someone who follows college baseball and has for 40 years, the top two coaches, in my opinion, so that's it, are Link Jarrett and Eric Bockage. And Jarrett went from Notre Dame, which he took Notre Dame to the College World Series and beat number one overall Tennessee in the Super Regional there. It was like the best team of all time, like OU football in 2004 against Kansas State and USC or 2003. But Jarrett is back home now. He was a shortstop. I remember watching him in the 90s at Florida State. And so he's back home. Like, you're probably not getting him. Eric Bockage is the guy to go get. Eric Bockage is the guy. Trust me. Eric Bockage is the guy you want to go get.
What do you like about Bockage?
I like that he really started with Tim Corbin as an assistant when Corbin got Vanderbilt rolling. And he was here in 04 when Jeremy Sowers and that super regional here. He can recruit. He can coach. He can teach hitting. He knows how to build a program. He took Michigan to the College World Series and got to the finals. Michigan, a northern school. He's been killing it at Clemson. Eric Bockage is the best coach in college baseball who's available right now.
What about a guy like Troy Tulowitzki? I know he was a part of the Texas baseball staff a few years ago. There were some questions as to whether or not he could even be offered the job because he did not have his college degree at the time. Is Troy Tulowitzki a guy that you would consider for that position?
Yeah, I would. I mean, you know, considering the UT job, so the UT football job is easily a top five job, but as a program, UT is probably, I don't know, 6-7 all time. Basketball is what, 21, 22, but it's a better job than that. Baseball is that job, but also the number one program of all time. So it'd be kind of a reach to hire someone who's never coached before. But I've also heard, by, you know, whether it's true or not, that Tulo could be the next guy. It's kind of set up. And you know what? Tulo could kill it here. So it could work, but it's definitely one of those. It's like, after following the Pierce hire, the way that went down, I don't want to have two hires for the best program of all time and be like, well, what are you doing? You know, like, where are we? Like, where is our capital that we built for 111 years or 120 years? You know,
it does feel like whoever CDC does go with, if he does make the decision, the Board of Regents and whoever else is in on that decision-making process does decide to get rid of David Pierce, that you give a lot of credit to whoever CDC goes with, because he now has a very established track record of hiring the right person regardless of the sport. And that's evident with what UT softball is doing right now and then making it right to that championship round. And he obviously goes to Oregon to pluck their coach away because he felt like he was the guy to lead this program right back to prominence. And sure enough, he's gotten that one right.
It is, but I'll tell you, as you go down the pecking order, from football to, in most programs, college basketball, men's college basketball, then baseball. UT may be a little different. It may be baseball ahead of college basketball. But
I would say it is.
To go to yeah, no, it is. But it's much easier to go to Eugene or Starkville and say, hey, you're the top guy. You're the guy I'm looking for, Vic or Mike. And guess what? You're coming back on the plane with me with a big check. And you're coming to Austin, and this is where you're going to be. Baseball is in that weird spot to where it's not as easy as you think. You can't just go to Link Jarrett in Tallahassee. He's like, dude, I played here. I'm from here. Like, I'm staying here. And Bakich may be that way too, to where it's like, you know, or Schloss at A&M. It's like, no, I'm getting my facilities. I've got everything I wanted here in College Station. You had a chance at me the last go around. I wanted the job and you said no. So it gets a lot tougher to actually, you can identify who the right guy is or right person is. But it's tough to actually get them to come.
I'm guessing with what just the settlement that the NCAA and the Power Five conferences just agreed upon with regards to the antitrust cases and how much they are going to owe, but also how it is going to open up the ability to actually provide full scholarships for a variety of programs that have been dealing with partial scholarships for a long time. That is going to help to even the playing field for a program like Texas, who has been at a disadvantage versus the Vanderbilts of the world because they had workarounds to make sure that they could give full rides to their guys, even if they weren't actual scholarships that they were giving them in the process.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because like,
you know what? Hold on, just one sec, Kevin. We're up on the commercial break. Let's finish this on the other side. We'll also get into UT softball and Cowboys.
I'm leaving. I'm leaving. I'm done.
He is Kevin Dunn joining me for the full hour here on Sports Day Plus on 102.7 ESPN.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Kevin Dunn here on Sports Day Plus for the full hour. Give him a follow on Twitter at KevinDunn01. If you were listening last segment, you heard a pretty full segment on UT baseball and David Pierce's future. Kevin believes that UT is going to replace David Pierce. It's not to say anything about David Pierce the person, but rather David Pierce the baseball coach and whether he is the right guy to lead the illustrious UT baseball program. And Kevin, as I mentioned just before the commercial break, UT baseball has been working at a disadvantage in the recent past versus the Vanderbilts of the world, and that is public universities don't have the ability to provide full rides in a roundabout way like the Vanderbilts of the world do because of Title IX. But that is probably about to change after the NCAA and the Power Five schools did agree to that settlement in the antitrust cases that they were facing that could have reached upwards of $20 billion if you believe the NCAA. I don't believe the NCAA. It was probably closer to $4 or $6 billion. Nonetheless, it is cut down to $3 billion or so. But with that comes the ability for public universities to provide full scholarships to whatever sport that they want to, assuming that you are still able to work the Title IX thing out. Just how big of a deal is that going to be for UT baseball, assuming that they are looking for a new manager in the not too distant future, to be able to say something like that to said candidate?
Probably helps out. I mean, so first off, Trey and I think are on the same wavelength here that Title IX is a great idea. Clearly, it was implemented the wrong way, and it was implemented with equity and not equality. And so softball has more scholarships than baseball. Everything is counting against the 85 scholarships in football who make all the money. But that should be cleared at that point. It's like, no, football is a different deal. They make all the money and everything's equal, right? Baseball should have as many scholarships as softball. So state schools, public universities have 11.7. So it's where I love all these people that, you know, and by the way, don't put up my Twitter again because some bag's going to, you know, tweet me and be like, you know what you're talking about. It's like, all right, no, you actually started watching college baseball yesterday. So thanks. But like the Dan Heathner from Dallas Baptist or Tim Corbin from Vanderbilt or any of these. Like, if you are looking at a new coach, you should scrutinize and comb over twice as much on the private school coach. Because what are you going to do with 11.7?
Yeah, and you're right about Title IX, it being a very bizarre thing when you have to count football in that equation. I've been arguing for a long time, and this should definitely be the case now that we are in the midst of the NIL era. College football should be separate from the rest of college sports. That is all of a sudden where you will see things start to make a lot more sense with regards to how the numbers work out with Title IX, which is whatever the percentage is of your student population. So let's say it's 49% male, 51% female. Those are the percentage of scholarships that you have to give out within your athletics department. So for football, that's 85 scholarships right there, which when you count the fact that the college basketball program is also going to be giving out mostly full rides, that leaves next to nothing for any other male program in your athletics department. And it also leads right to fiascos like what we saw with the college admission scandal from several years ago, where you had kids getting rides, getting scholarships to places like USC. Heck, Texas is on the list as well for rowing and tennis and sports that matter a lot less because these...
So Texas had a tennis coach who was locked up in prison, right?
Yeah, exactly. So these rich parents were able to pay these coaches to offer their kid a scholarship, and the coach had the scholarship to give because of the wackiness of Title IX. And I think removing football from the equation goes a long ways in helping to solve that. But this whole thing may blow up anyhow.
But I will say that my main takeaway from all that was, boy, Lori Loughlin is still really hot.
Yes, she is. She looked great.
Yeah, she looked good, dude. And apparently her husband's a show.
Her cameo in Seinfeld was a great one. She looks so good in that show.
She's a smoke show.
You mentioned softball a few minutes ago. Congrats to the UT softball team. They're going to be playing for a championship starting tomorrow, a best-of-three series. And they have an opportunity to win a third national championship for the athletics department this year, following the volleyball program, which just went back-to-back in the fall, and then the rowing team, which won a national championship, I think, over the weekend, maybe. So that would be a pretty cool way to end their Big 12 tenure with one more national championship.
Totally agree. And they look like, I mean, Mike White was the guy, getting back to the Pierce discussion and searching for a coach. You know, one of the great things about CDC is, especially with women's sports or lower men's sports, which are most of them, you can go to Eugene or Starkville and like, hey, Vic, you're coming home with us. What do you mean? You're on the plane. Here's a blank check. You're coming back on the plane with us. Like, all right, I'm coming back on the plane. So he got Mike White. I remember covering it for LHN, Mike White. He was coaching third for Oregon. They're playing, I think, super regional here in Austin against the UT softball team. And he was tipping pitches from third base. And, you know, I know baseball. I could see it. I'm like, he's tipping pitches. And so right away, I like the guy. Like, this guy can coach. He knows what he's doing. But it's easier to go get them. And CDC's done the easy thing, which is the best thing. It's not one of those where I'm like, I'm not giving you credit. But, like, you identified who the right coach was to go get, and you went and got him. And softball program is – Mike White knows what he's doing. You know, he's from New Zealand. And he was in a pro fast pitch men's league, which was pretty popular. Mm. And apparently it's all like Brits, New Zealanders, and I guess Americans. And then he hired Steve Singleton, I believe is his name, and who played at San Diego. I remember him. But he hit like 340 one year in Double A. He was like Todd Haney for all you old school UT baseball people. Was behind Ryan Sandberg with the Cubs at second base and hitting 330 in Triple A. And you're like, why is this guy not called up? And Singleton was that guy. You know, it's funny, you know, with the approach that you see in softball now, it used to be everyone was like Ichiro and moving in the box and trying to like run up to the ball and slash it, right? Or swat it. And now if you look at their load and approach, the front leg is stiff, the back, the base is loaded, and it looks like a, I mean, if you get the side angle, it looks like a major league base. It looks like Mike Trout swinging at a baseball. And they brought in a lot of baseball guys to teach them how to hit rise balls and everything.
That seems so obvious. Why would it take so long for something like that to be implemented?
Well, because it'd be sexist, Trey. All right. So stop doing what you're doing, dude. Like, you know, you want to bring in dude to teach chicks how to hit? Stop. All right.
Well, kudos to him, I guess, for having that idea, as quasi-sexist as it may have been. And look, I generally do not care about the UT softball team. I know it's sacrilege for me to say as a Longhorn fan that I don't care enough about a certain sport. I saw that the rowing team won a national championship over the weekend. I celebrated for less than a second before I moved on with my life. But I probably will be tuning into to at least parts of the games over the next couple of days.
I will say this. So I dated a chick my sophomore year and her roommate from Milwaukee. She's like, well, I'm going to go try out for the rowing team tomorrow. I'm like, what? She tried out and got a full ride. And I just shook my head. I'm like, you should not get a full ride. We have a guy who's going to be a third round pick who's getting half a ride and is our closer. This is the whole equity equality deal.
I knew a girl who she was, I don't know if petite is the right word. She was a small girl and she decided to go out for the rowing team because some of her friends did. And I saw her a couple years later. She must have been hitting the juice or something because she did end up getting a ride to the rowing team. And boy, she looked like a rower a few years later. Whereas when she initially tried out, she did not.
This gal was, her dad was the CEO for, was it Ghirardetti? What was the snack mix we would have?
Gardetto's?
Yeah, he was the CEO of that. Like, wow. She doesn't need a full row, okay?
No, she did not.
She was doing it for and giggles and like, I'll see if I can row. It's like, I have a full ride now. And I'm like, that's really cool.
You said she's from Wisconsin?
Yeah, Milwaukee.
Did she have the Wisconsin accent?
Yeah.
Okay. So we went to Wisconsin briefly when we were in Chicago last week.
Absolutely. Exactly. All that.
I'm sure that that accent is endearing to some people. You could have your favorite person to cite here is Jessica Alba. So we'll just go Jessica Alba. When I was single, you could have brought Jessica Alba to me and said, hey, this woman really likes you. She wants to be with you. And I would have said, that's awesome. And if she opened her mouth and she sounded like she was from Wisconsin, we probably had 2 weeks max. I cannot stand that accent. It is so off-putting. For those of you who are married to somebody from Wisconsin, good luck with that.
I agree. I mean, Jessica Alba could spit, you know, fire out of her mouth and I would have had sex with her. But I totally get your point. It's funny, though, you ended up with a Midwest chick. But Justine doesn't sound like my aunts or... No, I would go up there and, you know, I've heard all types of accents. And, I, you know, the reality is I don't want anyone with a heavy accent on any. I don't want a heavy British accent.
That is true.
I mean, it sounds okay, but it's like, I don't want that every day.
No, you're right. Justine has her Midwestern colloquialisms, but she's also adopted words like y'all, too. So she's still fairly middle of the road, even though sometimes her...
She does say Papa Squat.
She says Papa Squat, have a grabber, hose off. Yeah, there are a few things there. But she does not sound like she is from Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. All right, that is it for segment three. Coming up, one final segment with Kevin Dunn here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back here on Sports Day Plus, one more segment with Kevin Dunn, who is nice enough to join me for the full hour. And KD, did want to get to this before the end of the show. Larry Allen died out of the blue yesterday. It was announced by the Dallas Cowboys that he died suddenly while on vacation with his family in Mexico. 52 years old. he was a bigger guy, so maybe it's not as surprising considering that. But still, when somebody who we all know so fondly from the football field dies in his early 50s, it is at least a bit of a sad story. Larry Allen is one of the most dominant guards of all time in football.
No, if you told me, Kevin, you've got 22 guys to pick from, your all-time NFL roster, who's one of your guards? They go, well, Larry Allen's there. Like, he was that good. I mean, Larry Allen is maybe the best guard in the history of football. Like, that good. So, I mean, Sonoma State and, you know, those lines they have with Eric Williams, him, Stefanski, and those guys, you know, Nate Newton. I mean, they would maul you. And Larry Allen was a mauler. Larry Allen would call out where the run play was going to the defensive lineman before the snap and say, you still can't stop it, bro. Like, Larry Allen was, I mean, I'm not hyperbolic, and I probably am lack of prisoner of the moment too much. Larry Allen may be the best guard of all time.
Hmm. He was also one of the first massive offensive linemen who had freakish athleticism to boot. Like, there's been a clip floating around social media over the last couple of days.
Chasing down the guy on the, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, he's exhibiting like 4'6", 4'7", speed right there. At his size, at 350 pounds and 6'5", or whatever he was.
Yeah, no, he was a freak. And hopefully everything, you know, hopefully it was natural. I mean, I don't know with Mexico now. But hopefully it was natural. And, got guys that size. I mean, it was at 52, very sad to hear that he passed away.
Who is the second best guard if Larry Allen is number one?
It's a good question. Who is Randall? Who is the Vikings guard? Who is really damn good? I don't know. I mean, maybe Quentin Nelson, who's with Indianapolis right now. I don't know. But Larry Allen's the one who stands out the most, and that says a lot about Larry Allen.
Sure. It was learned in the last couple of days that the current Dallas Cowboys roster, which has a lot of questions, including the overall mindset of the football team, with Jerry Jones initially saying this offseason that they were going all in and then walking that back soon after, and them doing very little in free agency and having a bit of a mixed bag with their draft at the end of April. Well, one of the biggest question marks is what they're going to be doing at the running back position. They re-signed Ezekiel Elliott after the draft, but they don't really necessarily have the guy. Mike McCarthy said that it may be a by committee sort of deal, which you would assume would include second-year player Deuce Vaughn, a local kid who played his college ball at Kansas State. Deuce Vaughn said in the last couple of days that at OTAs, he's actually been working out a fair amount at slot receiver, which is a bit curious to me. Now, he is still considered an official part of that backfield.
Total sense, by the way. Total sense.
It does make total sense.
Right. I mean, you know, he's that quick in utilizing him, and I felt like they underutilized him last year. But yeah, let him go. Like, put him in the slot, and you can't touch anyone anymore. So, like, let him go.
Yeah, I guess you're right about that. You do have to give a little bit of a buffer. Otherwise, it's an automatic penalty. So I think that if he's given an opportunity on the field, certainly at running back, but maybe as a kick returner, he is going to show some really nice things. But if that ends up being as a slot receiver, as somebody who is a big Deuce Vaughn fan, not just from getting to watch him as a player, but getting to speak with him a couple of times, just a really good dude to go along with that football skill.
Heard.
He's going to be one of those rare Cowboys that I find myself rooting for, even if I don't necessarily root for the team.
Everything I've heard, like, he's a great guy, Trey. And you've talked to him. I've never met him, so I have no idea.
Yeah, at least that's the front that he is. I say a front. That's how he conducts himself. Is like somebody who's a really good dude. So.
Yeah, but I get the sense he's actually like that too.
No, I do as well. That's why I wouldn't say it if somebody just seemed like a bit of a phony, but they're putting off this nice persona. But you can tell once the cameras stop rolling, all of a sudden they're treating interns like crap. That was not Deuce Vaughn. Deuce Vaughn was very respectful to everybody, very thoughtful in the answers that he gave to the questions that we were asking him. And yeah, it's really cool the moment that he had in getting drafted by the Cowboys. Former Texas coach Chris Fawn got to be the guy to make the phone call. He's now a part of the Cowboys organization. So we got to call his son and say, hey, we just drafted you. You're officially a member of the Dallas Cowboys now. That was really cool.
So let me ask you, so I'm watching softball right now. We're taping this before it airs, a couple hours before, so not too far before. Are you watching softball? Like, I mean, because I'm watching Florida, Oklahoma right now, and I want Florida to win because I want Texas to win the whole thing, and I don't want to slay the dragon, man. Let Florida do that.
Mm-hmm. Am I watching softball?
Yeah.
Not really. I'm checking in on scores for the UT baseball team and or for the UT softball team and also who their prospective opponent is. But no, I'm not watching softball with any regularity. I will probably tune into the games over the next couple of days. I won't be watching beginning to end necessarily, but I'll tune in. It'll be recorded through YouTube TV and I'll be able to fast forward to key moments.
Right.
But I'll probably be watching more UT softball than I am the NBA finals over the next week plus.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the funny thing too, is that like the Mavs are in it and I've got Dallas buddies and I've watched more softball than I have NBA finals or NBA playoffs, which will tell you a lot.
It is interesting to see all the Kyrie Irving hate coming from the Boston end, and it's understandable because he was a real POS.
Well, let's be real. Boston doesn't like black guys.
That's certainly a part of it, but Kyrie Irving was also a...
I'm kidding to some degree there.
some degree, but Boston also does have a reputation, but Kyrie Irving was at his absolute worst in Boston, and the people there could not wait to get rid of him. Credit to Kyrie Irving, though, in the last couple of days as he's talking about the hostility that he'll be facing and heading back to Boston, he was owning the fact that he was acting very immaturely and that he doesn't want that to be reflective of who and what he is as a person now. Well, so credit to him for admitting his mistakes and moving on. Not that I really care one way or the other, but that has me rooting for the Mavs a little bit more than I probably would be.
But that's where Kyrie, KD, LeBron, a lot of the NBA guys need to realize. You guys, you don't understand this, but for us that have jobs and everyday lives, you come off as the most pompous, superficial, over-the-top, entitled pieces of crap that we've ever seen. And the NBA has just gotten, I mean, the NBA is just, you know, the players are so in love with themselves that it's just, if you're in your 40s and you're a dude, it's like, who are you? I don't want to watch this. And so the fact that he admitted that is a big step, I would say, if we're in therapy.
Yeah, it's better than what a lot of guys are able to do. A lot of guys aren't willing to admit that. A lot of guys just keep acting that same way, and it does feel like he's turned a corner with regards to his maturity. Now, you can argue that it was a pretty low place that he was starting from, but hey, progress is progress. And when the Mavs signed him, even as somebody who doesn't follow basketball a whole lot anymore, I said to myself, this guy has been a locker room problem pretty much wherever he's been. And yeah, he had that title with LeBron, but he forced his way off of that roster after winning a championship. So this is probably not going to end well for this team when they acquired him last season. But here we are a little bit more than a year later, and he and Luka have the Mavs on the cusp of winning a second NBA championship. So
I will say this. I watch a lot of their conference finals games, and man, like when he wants to play, Kyrie is a stud, is a top 10 player in the league. And he's nailing threes. He's getting the lane, hit pull-ups. I was like, whoa. So, you know, he's right there. I mean, you know, and he's not a dumb guy, clearly. No.
Well, other than the whole flat earth thing, that was not very
right. I was about to say though, but even that, it was him thinking he's wrong. But he's not, you know, He was more just, you know, spitballing, but he's spitballing in front of national TV, and it gets picked up, and it's like, Kyrie's a flat earther, and it's like, you know, I don't think he's a dumb guy. But I do think that he's one of those guys that is so caught up in the NBA right now. And it's why the NBA is not popular to anyone over 35.
Yeah, it's a very different game than it was a couple of decades ago. By the way, Kyrie has some of the best handles maybe in the history of the game, certainly of anybody playing right now. When the ball is in his hand and he wants to get his shot off or get it to the bucket or even find a teammate open for a basket.
He can do it.
He's about as good as anybody in the league. KD, thank you as always for the time, my friend.
All right, appreciate it.
Thank you to you for hanging out today. A programming reminder before I bid you adieu. Tomorrow is Wednesday. That means I'll be spending a couple of segments with Justin Wells of Inside Texas and InsideTexas.com to go along with that Inside Texas YouTube channel. Until then, thank you so much for listening to today's show. We'll be back tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellie.